Good morning. I'm glad for the Sons of Salvation being part of the indigenous population of Washington. In this town, people come and go a lot. It's good that we have indigenous people like them. I'm from an indigenous neighborhood in Washington, D.C., sometimes referred to as the other Washington, as opposed to the official Washington. And I'm very glad to be here this morning at the National North American Association of Christians in Social Work. You are a group that has been important to me for a long time. And I'd like to speak to us this morning. You said sometimes to be a commentator, you speak to what's going on. I don't know if you've heard, but there's an election on Tuesday. Have you heard that? Yeah. We're not going to sit here this morning and ignore the fact that there's an election on Tuesday. How do people of faith, how do we act on November 2nd and then on November 3rd? That's what I want to talk about this morning. So we'll get to that in a minute, but first I think the brothers here and our topic remind me of a story about another speaking event a while back, an unusual one. It wasn't in a hotel, wasn't at a town meeting, a university, or a church, my usual normal venues. It was when I got a letter from the prisoners at Sing Sing, the inmates in upstate New York. Come and speak to us, they said. It sounded like a good idea, so I wrote back and said, sure, when do you want me to come? And this young inmate, prisoner, young brother wrote back and said, well, he said, we're free most nights. He said, we're kind of a captive audience here. And so we worked out the arrangements, and I went, and the prison authorities were very generous. They gave us a room down in the bowels of Sing Sing. This is that prison, you've heard the phrase, up the river, right? This is up the Hudson River, Sing Sing Prison. 80 guys and I spent 4 hours together, left alone for the whole evening. And I'll never forget what one of those young brothers said to me that night. He said, Jim, all of us at Sing Sing are from just about 4 or 5 neighborhoods in New York City. I mean, all of us here at Sing Sing are from just about 4 or 5 neighborhoods in New York City. He said, it's like a train begins in my neighborhood. You get on that train when you're 9 or 10 years old, and that train ends up here at Sing Sing. That's what he said. He'd had a spiritual conversion inside the walls at Sing Sing. He was part of the New York Theological Seminary's program teaching preachers inside the prison. He was getting his Master of Divinity inside the prison. And you graduate when your sentence is up. So he said to me, when I get out of Sing Sing, I'm going to go back and stop that train. Now that is what I call a faith-based initiative. There are those who speak of faith-based initiatives in the corridors of power, but I want to say that is what I call a faith-based initiative. Our Bible says that if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, what does it say? You can move a mountain. Now, we say that, but I'm not sure we believe that. Do we believe we can move mountains, that we can stop fast-moving urban trains that put kids on the train because of their zip code? Do we think we can stop those trains? He thought he could stop it. Now, when you're in prison, you're often at the bottom of the bottom. You may be already poor, and now you're in prison. When you're in jail, you're often at the bottom of the bottom. If this young brother at Sing Sing believes that his faith can cause him to stop a fast-moving urban train, if he thinks his faith can move mountains, what excuse do the rest of us have? Today, I want to talk about faith in an election year and beyond the election. There are those who say that all of our religious values and ethics can be reduced, can be restricted, can be shrunk down to only one or two hot-button social issues. That's what they say. If you are a religious person, there really is only one issue, or maybe two, that is of concern to you. I've just been on a 15-city, 12-day bus tour with a call to renewal from Minneapolis-St. Paul through Madison, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Chicago, Grand Rapids, Detroit, Michigan, Toledo, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Akron, Ohio, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, organized by faith-based organizations, churches working day in and day out with people who are poor, on the ground, on the street. Let me tell you, every shelter, every food pantry, every soup kitchen is in a condition called overflow. Overflow everywhere. The census tells us that poverty is rising every year for the last 3 years. In Chicago, I learned the average age of a homeless person now is 9 years of age. I want to tell you, those faith-based organizations, those churches, many evangelical, Catholic, black church, mainline Protestant, they do not agree that the only religious issue at stake in this election is something like gay marriage. Here's what they say. They say poverty is a religious issue. Do you agree? Poverty is a religious issue. The environment, the protection of God's creation is a religious issue. And whether we should have gone to war in Iraq and what has happened because of that is a religious issue. It is time for people of faith, yes, to vote their values, but to vote all of our values. Our God is not a Republican or a Democrat. And the cry of the poor rings from cover to cover in the Bible. There are more than 2,000 verses in the Bible about poor people. I am an evangelical Christian. I cannot, I will not ignore that when I go to the polls on November 2nd. When we walk into that polling booth, of all the issues on our minds, in our hearts, all of our concerns as people of faith, let us also ask the question, how will my vote for this county commissioner? How will my vote for this mayor, for this governor, for this member of Congress, or for this president of the United States? How will my vote impact poor families and children? That is a fair Christian question. Sometimes one feels like one's faith has been stolen in the public arena. It honestly feels like that sometimes. How did the faith of Jesus come to be understood as pro-rich, pro-war, and only pro-American? How has that happened? My friends, it's time for an evangelical rescue operation. It's time to bring our faith back, take our faith back to a gospel that has always been good news to poor people. Any gospel that isn't good news to poor people, whatever else it is not the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's time we told the truth about this election and any election. In elections, of course, they're concerned about soccer mom and now security mom and NASCAR dad. I want to tell you about another mom. We met her in indigenous Washington, D.C. not so long ago. She was at the drive-in window. She was running back and forth to a table in the corner where there were three kids. They were her kids, helping her kids with her homework at 4 o'clock in the afternoon at the Burger King, trying to decide between buying medicine for her kids or winter boots or paying the rent. You see, she can't do all three. She's working hard, full-time, and she's still poor. Do you know that most poor people in America work hard, full-time, and they are still poor? They are playing by the rules.
They are doing all that we said they should do. And 9.2 million families in America are not making enough money to survive. They have 20 million children. If you work hard, and if you're in America, most Americans think you shouldn't be poor. But they are. I call her Burger King Mom. Burger King Mom. They speak for soccer mom. They want her votes. They speak for security mom. They want her votes. They speak for NASCAR dad. They want his votes. Who is speaking for Burger King Mom? Who cares about her and her family? The truth be told, if you weren't doing the work you're doing every day in neighborhoods around the country, if we weren't feeding the hungry, sheltering the homeless, taking care of the sick at our clinics, if the faith-based community wasn't doing that, this nation would fall apart in about 48 hours. And that's the truth. We are the glue that holds a nation together. But you know what? You can't keep pulling bodies out of the river and not send somebody upstream to see what or who is throwing them in. Paul Bowen and I and Todd Bassett had lunch a few months ago, and I mentioned that notion about the river, and Todd, the new commander of the Salvation Army, jumped up almost out of his seat. He said, "That's what William Booth said a long time ago. Our founder said that at the Salvation Army." He used to say, Todd said, that you can't keep picking up the bodies at the bottom of the cliff and not climb the mountain and see who's pushing them off the edge. What if faith-based organizations doing the work on the ground across the nation, what if we magnified our collective voice on issues that affect poor people? Overcoming poverty must become in this nation a nonpartisan issue and a bipartisan cause. Call to renewal brings together, sometimes I like to say, the warring factions of the churches. Let me go a bit further, because I think we can tell the truth this morning. Sometimes our churches act like gangs. We got our grievances. We got our grudges. We've got our turf. We got our territory, and we even got our paraphernalia. I've done some gang truce work with Crips and Bloods and Vice Lords. I want to say, sometimes it is easier to get warring street gangs together than the churches. Because they have been to too many funerals. They have buried too many friends, and they want to stop the madness. But you know, we have a hard time sitting down together, our warring gangs. Call to Renewal, basically, Paul's always there. Call to Renewal is a gang truce movement in the churches. We got the evangelicals there. We got the Catholic bishops there. They're a very large gang. They've got chapters all over the country. We've got World Vision there. We've got the denomination, the black churches there. We have the National Association of Evangelicals there and the National Council of Churches. Those two groups act like the Crips and the Bloods. They never sit down together. I always like to have a Mennonite on hand to sit between them to make sure that nothing happens. We need a gang truce movement in the churches, because too many of those homeless 9-year-olds in Chicago have been falling between the cracks of our divisions. It's time to speak the truth. Time to come together and demand solutions to the issues of poverty. We got to say to our politicians, you can't just settle for poverty as a nation and then tell us to clean up the mess. That's what they do. They pat us on the back. You are holistic. You change lives. You are the solution. Sorry about those cuts to child health insurance. Sorry about those cuts for low-income housing. Sorry about no money for child care. But you all are good at making bricks without straw. We've got no resources. But you go ahead and put a Band-Aid on the open wounds of injustice. But they say do it quietly. Don't say anything. And don't ever ask, why are so many people hungry? Why are so many people homeless? I have met with the hunger task forces of Madison, Milwaukee, Akron and Toledo. And you know, they're all tired because there are programs that were put into place a generation ago, food banks and shelters, you know what? To be temporary measures. That's what they said. They're now permanent. They are a way of life. People are not supposed to do their shopping for a lifetime at food banks. They're supposed to make enough money from their work to support themselves and their families. Isaiah has a platform. I like it better than Republican or Democratic platforms. We used it on this tour. Listen to what Isaiah says. No more shall there be in it an infant that lives but a few days, or an old person who does not live out a lifetime. They shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For like the days of a tree shall the days of my people be, and my chosen will long enjoy the work of their hands. They shall not labor in vain. That means you work hard and full time and can't make enough money to support you. You feel like you're laboring in vain, nor bear their children for calamity. They shall be the offspring blessed by the Lord. Isaiah is talking about health and security and safe, affordable housing. Isaiah is talking about a living family income. That's Isaiah's platform. It's time it become our platform too. On a global scale, we now have half of God's children, in this world live on less than $2 a day. You know, Bono, the U2 rock star singer, was in town a while back. He spoke to a Washington group of media and political elites, and he said to them, about 1,500 strong, he said, "Now, I'm a little nervous today because I'm not used to speaking to groups of less than 20,000 people." And into this elite Washington crowd, he said, in his wonderful Irish brogue, he said, "It's if God is on his knees, on his knees, right there, on his knees, begging us, to respond to the pandemic of HIV/AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa." He said, "Mr. President, there is a connection between HIV/AIDS and what's happening in Africa and ever winning a war on terrorism. Somebody, please tell these candidates, both of them, that just killing terrorists will never end terrorism. Unless we drain that swamp of injustice in which these mosquitoes of terrorism breed, hopelessness, despair, resentment will never overcome the very real threats of terrorism." I live 20 blocks from the White House. My son Luke and Jack, my wife Joy, we all live there. We live on one of the top 10 terrorist targets in the world. Anything hits the White House, my family is involved. I want to stop further murderous, hideous violence against innocent people, maybe even my own family, with all my heart, but not in a way that takes out other people's six-year-olds. How do we find an effective and yet a moral response to terrorism? Gordon Brown is the Chancellor of the Exchequer in Great Britain. He'll be the next Prime Minister there. He says, "You know what? For the first time in history, we have the knowledge, we have the expertise, we have the understanding, the information, technology, and the resources to really, for the first time, significantly put an end to extreme poverty in the world." You had David Beckman speak to you. I'm sure he told you the facts, how it lines up. Gordon Brown looked me in the eye and said, "But one thing we do not have. One thing we do not have. We do not have the moral will. We do not have the political will." Then he looked at me and said, "You're a religious leader. That's your job. That's your job. Create the moral will. Because moral will creates political will." There's a best-selling book called The Tipping Point. It's a book about how products and ideas and concepts move from that place of being out there in the public domain, but they reach a point where there's a tipping point, and all of a sudden, everybody knows about the product, the idea, the concept. A tipping point is reached. We are now in this movement to overcome poverty. We are on this side of a tipping point. We have our ministries. They're wonderful ministries. And now we have also our models. In Madison, I went to a housing project run by the Baptists. 400 formerly homeless families with kids, now in stable, secure housing. And there's a learning center after school every day, and the computers actually work. And so homeless kids who came in with a grade point of 1.2 now have a grade point of 3.5, and they're not dropping out of school, and they're all going on to college. Here's a newsflash. You take poor children and provide stability and security and opportunity, and they will succeed. And those who say there are no solutions to poverty are lying to us. But our ministries aren't enough. Our models aren't enough. It's time to talk about something new. I heard this word in the air all across the country. The word I heard in the air was movement. From ministry to models to movement. You see, history is not changed finally by elections. This is a very important election. But history is changed by movements, by social movements. And the best social movements are ones that have a spiritual foundation. We, as people of faith, have done this before. Do you remember the abolition of slavery was a movement? A social movement with a spiritual foundation. Women's suffrage, child labor law reform. And who would have imagined in the civil rights movement, this movement that was animated, driven by black churches. Without the black churches, there never would have been a freedom struggle and a freedom movement in this country. We have done it before, and we can do it again. I met in Mexico just last year with Christians from Asia, Africa, and Latin America. All evangelicals, Pentecostals. They're called the MICA Network, the MICA Challenge. And they take their inspiration from the prophet Micah, who says, if you want to beat your swords in the plowshares and your spears in the pruning hooks, Micah 4, then everybody has to have their own vine and fig tree, their own piece of the planet, their own share in the security, their own patch on which to build some kind of future for themselves and their children. So all these Christians, millions strong. The guy that introduced me to speak was the head of a little church in Ethiopia that now has 4 million members in his one little church in Ethiopia. They said, you know, we fed the hungry. Street kids who had won her heart. And she became the best street organizer